All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 132. It's Tuesday night. This is when we like to talk to you about whatever you'd like to talk about in college football and what's going on as we continue through the offseason. My name is Bob Akinyeri, and once again, I'm your host. It's offseason week as we work through, obviously, in sports. If you're a college fan, you know the NCAA tournament's going on. In hoops, interesting Final Four we have there. I mean, Tom Herman, the head coach of FAU, is doing air guitar as the Owls made their way into the Final Four. So a little bit of a football twist to that. But if there's any topic you'd like to talk about, feel free to hit request and we'll get to it. You know, one of the stories that popped up today that made us a little sad, and this one's, it's a small school closing, which typically isn't a huge story outside of sort of, you know, some sadness in there, but it's Iowa Wesleyan, which is a small private school, obviously in Iowa. But what makes it so sad is that was the birthplace of the air raid. That's where guys like Mike Leach were assistants and developing so much of what we know as the air raid offense. That was the big lab where a lot of those ideas were being done. At Iowa Wesleyan, the school had been struggling already, even before the pandemic. They were kind of asking for help to save themselves and stay viable. But I think the pandemic was a hammer for a lot of schools. Even major schools lost some money on there. And I think for poor Iowa Wesleyan, D3, they just couldn't quite make it work. So they've announced their closing in May. And again, they are considered the birthplace of the air raid offense. And after talking so much about the late, great Coach Leach, it was one of those things that we just wanted to take a second to talk about. But really, anything in college football, if there's something you'd like to bring up, just feel free to hit request and we can start talking about it. As I said at the beginning, Tom Herman was seen rocking his air guitar at Madison Square Garden for FAU, working its way into the Final Four. So it's interesting to see that. It looks like we have someone who wants to join us. I'll go ahead and let you up as well. Let me know when you're up here, reigning Natty Champs, and we'll start talking. Just feel free to unmute.
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Good, good, good.
So what's up? What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, like, how many more years do you think Saban has?
Oh man, there's a story. I think that's a question a lot of folks would like to have answered. So I think, I mean, he's basically got, you know, no matter what, I mean, it's impossible to think of him completely crashing and burning like some really bad seasons. So he's basically got as long as he wants to be there. So the only person who'll ever, I think, truly know that will be Coach Saban himself. He loves what he does. If he doesn't, he leaves almost immediately. And I mean, the NFL, the visit he had to the NFL, famously, he got there and just got tired of being at that level and immediately jumped back to the college ranks, you know, from LSU to the Dolphins and then to Alabama and hasn't looked back. It suits him so well. And he has a wonderful system. I mean, his assistants get poached on a regular basis because they're talented, and yet he can just lock and load and reload the way he's designed that program. One of the things that I really enjoyed reading about, in the offseason last year is part of what, and it was an interesting book, and the author has slipped my mind, and I can look that up in a second. But the point of what Saban's success has been is the ability to make everything about recruiting, like everything about recruiting. The first day they said when he got there at Alabama, he told people, like, no matter who you are, from, you know, the receptionist all the way to coaches, everything we do here is to look good so people want to come here to Alabama and play, and so that he can get the pick of those star players. So his system works. And I mean, the question of how long he would want to be there, it's going to be up to him. And we can only guess. I mean, there's some coaches who've hung around for a while. I mean, just look at, Joe Paterno or obviously K-State. They've had head coaches that just stayed and stayed and stayed. And I think until he gets tired and bored, he's going to stay there. And then maybe he might go to TV or something. But it's hard to imagine him leaving anytime soon. He seems to enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you for your insight.
Yeah, no problem. That's, I think, but that is really, that is the question, that if somebody could say that, they'd have the scoop of the century. But also, I mean, I think a lot of other head coaches would take a great sigh of relief. But there's no denying he's great with it. But yeah, for sure. Hey, thanks for asking.
All right.
So yeah, kind of looking at, again, if you'd like to join us, feel free to hit request. Looks like we have someone else. We're going to let you up in a second, Max Foot. But you know, one of the other things that was kind of one of the highlights today on RCFB in terms of what's been a popular topic is Matt Rhule, who of course is Nebraska's new head coach. After returning to the college ranks, he said, if you notice in our videos that we post, and I'm proud to post those, they're always of us working. They're never of us talking. They're always of us working. The program is built on work. It's not built on hype. So, you know, I admire Matt Rhule. He's a good head coach. What he did at Temple and Baylor after Baylor got completely obliterated in all of that scandal. Certainly he's a great coach at the college level, and Nebraska got a good, hopefully a good person for them. I mean, we've said that a couple of times with Nebraska and it's been kind of a surprise, but, I have to say Nebraska fan, human sleeping bag, he got the high comment on all of this, and he noticed that, our Huskers have survived on hype for the last 20 years. So we'll see where that goes. Hey, you know, Max Foot, what's going on?
I'm just a Big 12 fan, and I was wondering what you think the Big 12 expansion will do this next upcoming years and stuff like that. So
that's a great question. Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question. I think Big 12 expansion, you lose your two biggest programs, you know, and obviously that can't be stated enough. I mean, you lose Oklahoma, you lose Texas to the SEC, but at the same time, you know, as time has passed, they've actually, I think they're in a better position than what appears to be now their primary rival, which is the Pac-12, because the Pac-12 just lost their two best teams, at least highest profile teams. I mean, Oregon's great, Washington's great. Please, you know, I all respect to those programs, and occasionally Stanford can play football sometimes. But, you know, at the same time, they're having trouble reloading. I mean, they might get San Diego State, which is great for basketball now, huh? But or might get Southern Methodist, but they're not in the same position. And so Big 12, where it was bringing in BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF, they look a lot stronger, at least in this kind of in the situation it is now for the. Because there's three, I mean, it's kind of hard to, I'm wondering if we're going to start talking about the conferences differently rather than the P5 and the G5, the Power 5 and the G5. Are we going to start talking about, you know, the Big 2, the SEC, and the Big 10, as well as the other three, which are the, you know, the ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12? But in this kind of race and you know, I really admire the Big 12 commissioner right now. Although, you know, as much as your mark is, I like him. He didn't add these four teams. He just kind of picked it up. It's going to be interesting to see. They seem to offer more as a conference, as a cogent conference. So would they give them an advantage in the long run and perhaps poaching some of the big Pac-12 teams, if that media deal, which seems to be ongoing forever and ever, doesn't look good, that might give them a bit of an edge. So right now, I think against the Pac-12, which is the easiest conference to compare them against, given the circumstances, they seem to be stronger because they have teams with a big base. I mean, BYU, they're not like Notre Dame, but they do have a national following. A lot of people are a part of the LDS community. And also people know who they are. And then, you know, UCF's an enormous school of Patu in Florida. That helps a lot. You know, sure, they had that kind of fantastical perfect season. And Cincy's high enough profile. So you've got some programs there that definitely, and Houston, you know, I mean, gosh, not to forget them at all. So I think the expansion, given the way things are moving, has put them in a more advantageous position against their rivals. Wow, we have a lot of people who've sent in requests. I'm going to go ahead and let everyone up. Let's see here. It looks like, hey, Tyler Bass fan account. What's up?
Hey, South Carolina fan here. Just curious on your thoughts with Juice Wells and Spencer Rattler returning with all the transfer portal action they've had. Pretty excited for year three Beamer.
Yeah, I mean, Beamer's done such a tremendous job. We're a bit of fans of him here at RCFB, especially those of us who do the talk, because he was the first head coach we ever had as a guest way back in May. But at the same time, I mean, what he's done with the program, it's a tough situation. It's always South Carolina's always got to compete extra hard because of, you know, the SEC. But I mean, it's a big deal to have those guys return. In fact, I just saw there was a quote earlier that, I mean, like about a week ago, Spencer Rattler was asked if Oklahoma fans will try to claim him if he finds success in the NFL. And Rattler straight out said, I hope not. you know, that's got to feel good for South Carolina fans, although I'm sure, you know, if you're an Oklahoma fan, not necessarily thrilled. But at the same time, I agree with some of the comments that were made on that, which is kind of what did people expect him to say? Although I think some fans, some players seem to have a little bit of positive memories of some of their former outposts. But I think it's going to be exciting to see how they do. I mean, obviously, Georgia's absolutely terrifying. So we'll see how they seem to roll out into this season. But I mean, where do you think? I mean, I just kind of pinging it back to you. How do you feel they're going to do this season?
I think they'll be pretty solid. I feel like the expectation has to be at least 8-9 wins to see like a good improvement. Obviously, bowl game loss wasn't ideal, but last two games of the regular season got all of Gamecock Nation feeling good. So hopes are high.
Yeah, I mean, that Tennessee and Clemson game was just – we were just riveting. I mean, Tennessee was just a shocker. But then squeezing that one out against Clemson, that had to feel great. But, hey, Tyler, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So let's see here. formerly known as Oven Mitt, what's going on, man?
Not much, brother.
So what's on your mind?
I just want to kind of comment on the South Carolina stuff.
Absolutely.
And I'm a diehard Kentucky Wildcats fan. You know, I dealt with the 0-12 years, you know, Joker Phillips, all those kind of weird-ass 10 years where we just were not relevant. But we have slowly built up since 2013. And, I mean, nobody can deny the fact that we have changed our culture. And I just kind of laugh at the South Carolina fans, you know? I mean, how can you beat us last year because our literally top 10 NFL quarterback draft pick was hurt. And we beat y'all with Lynn Bowden at quarterback. And I just don't understand kind of how Kentucky still doesn't have some respect on their name. I mean, Brad White, our defensive coordinator, has taken this team to top tier. I mean, we lost to Georgia by 8 points last year, and they won the national championship. So I would just kind of like to ask you guys from, you know, because, of course, I'm biased as a Kentucky fan. I love Kentucky, and I will always love Kentucky. And so I just thought, like, what is the real consensus around our program from other fans of the SEC? And I appreciate the fact I was allowed to talk, man. I really do.
No, man, absolutely. And again, we love anyone who wants to join in. Feel free to hit request. But yeah, I mean, I'll give my perspective. And again, if any of the folks who are still up here want to unmute afterwards and share your own opinions of it, you're absolutely welcome to. But I think Kentucky is in a lot of ways similar to how a lot of folks view South Carolina, in sort of a rising program that has constantly been sort of in the middle of the SEC in trying to find success. And then Mark Stoops has done a lot of the right things. I mean, I remember when Nebraska obviously were the first people to fire their head coach, and everyone was like, oh, are they going to grab Mark Stoops? And we would discuss that a lot here on talks back during those months of the season. And, you know, Mark Stoops has got such a great situation with Kentucky. He's building him up. He's getting that program where he wants. They've done a lot to incentivize him to stay there. And I think so they've got a coach who wants to be there, wants to stay there, and wants to build a program there. Now, obviously, last season started off super strong for Kentucky and then kind of got a little wonky there midseason, and obviously just like South Carolina, they both kind of fell a little flat in their bowl games. But yeah, they're remarkably similar in that regard, the more I think about it. I mean, a lot of times we're looking at those two programs. Obviously, Stoops has been at Kentucky quite a few years at this point, whereas Beamer's sort of rising. It's, you know, going into year three, and it's been kind of incrementally building up. But I do think if we're kind of comparing apples to apples, those are the two of the programs I really do, you know, to a lesser extent. Oh gosh. I mean, Missouri's kind of in there too, in terms of programs, where I'm kind of curious to see how they balance out there in the East. No, go ahead.
You're right, definitely, like, about the fact that there's very, very similar circumstances between programs, right? Like, always being right there, but never being really there. You know, that's kind of how we kind of vision ourselves. Like, but the difference is South Carolina had literally coaches of all time a few years ago in Spurrier. You know, they've got the sandstorm. They've got all that building up for them. And, you know, Kentucky, we lost 47-0 to Vanderbilt in 2010. I mean, we're never a program that was at all talked about or thought about. And Mark Stoops honestly deserves a statue in Lexington, in my opinion, you know? And I know it sounds a little bit, you know, it sounds like I'm just a fan. But, I mean, we never experienced success like what we've experienced under Mark Stoops. I mean, it's just happened. And when I look at, you know, like, Shane Beamer came in and now he's turned this program. No, this program is already, you know, lengths above what Kentucky ever was. I mean, but what we've done here is so special, really. And I'm just so proud of Kentucky, you know. And Mark Stoops has built this culture around defense and run first and put it up your nose. And it's kind of like the last of the old school teams. Everybody wants to run air raid and they want to do these offensive schemes. And, like, I'm really proud to be a Kentucky fan, you know, and I understand I'm beating a dead horse, but it means there was a time just lose to Vanderbilt, you know, every year. And it was like the big game of the year was losing to Vanderbilt. And, hey, if we don't lose by 30 to Louisville, that's a good game. And it's just incredible, you know, to see what good coaching and a program and a culture change can do. And so, honestly, I don't even hate South Carolina. I just hate Shane Beamer. He said he could fight Mark Stoops. I don't see the interview. Mark Stoops will whoop that boy's ass. I'm going to get off here.
I think Shane Beamer wins that fight. And I do have a lot of respect for what Mark Stoops is doing. But I think the fact that he's kind of that first great coach since Bear Bryant to be bringing the Wildcats up. Whereas the expectation with Spurrier was so high. And then Muschamp came in. We expected good things out of Muschamp. Obviously, that was a waste of 6 years. And took us back a ways. So now that we have to kind of live up to that expectation, we expect to be beating the Tennessees, the Kentuckys, and getting those wins against Clemson. And I think we're finally getting to that point where we're getting across the hump. And there's a ton to be excited about with Beamer going into year three. Finally got a good returning quarterback who is feeling comfortable, has some receivers that he's played with before, like knows the systems. And yeah, like Kentucky's solid, but there's other games circled on the calendar.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And that's always going to be our problem until we win the East, which until Georgia decides not to be a program, we probably won't ever do. But I will tell you one thing. And that's that Will Muschamp rides Dolphins, and the Cats have won 5 out of 6. South Carolina, go Cats. I'm going to get off.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for joining us. You know, the more I was thinking about that, I think about there's even other similarities, too, because obviously I think more recently we think of South Carolina. I mean, at this point, quite a few years ago, I remember, you know, they went through a series of coaches who were legends and who kind of decided to try their hand at riding the ship at South Carolina. I mean, Lou Holtz took over a program that was just utterly at the bottom. I have my own opinions of Lou Holtz in some ways, but I admire what he did at South Carolina. Because I mean, they'd won one. Actually, it's kind of funny too, because they won one game the season before he got there, and then they won no games his first season. But then he built them up at least to be able to compete in some bowl games. And then of course he gets Spurrier, and then you know the team is all right. And then you know Muschamp is where we just talked about him. But then I also think back to Kentucky only because I remember when you know they had Bill Curry, who had just come off of Alabama, and you know. He coached them, so he's not, I mean, he's not like superstar of the Alabama coaching tree, but he wasn't a bad coach, at least entirely. And then they had Hal Mum, who we were just talking about. I mean, he is the guy who invented the air raid when he was at Iowa Wesleyan with Mike Leach and all that. Now, of course, at the beginning of the conversation, I mentioned that Iowa Wesleyan has announced they're closing the entire school, but that was the birthplace of the air raid offense. Yeah, and then they had Rich Brooks. And the funny thing about Rich Brooks is I totally understood why Kentucky hired him. Because if you know his background, he coached at Oregon. He's the guy who turned Oregon around because Oregon was the absolute, the two Oregon schools, but especially the Ducks were just awful for so long in the Pac-12. I mean, the Pac-10, the Pac-8, you know, and the toilet bowl is the infamous bottom of the barrel where both the two Oregon schools went in winless. And they nicknamed that particular iteration of the rivalry. So he gets there and turns them into at least a team that can compete. The state, if you ever go to Autzen Stadium, they still have like a Rich Brooks sign up. And it's so funny because they've obviously been a very competitive program since. But they credited so much to him building that foundation over at Oregon that if you go to that stadium, you'll still see Rich Brooks above like the old press box as like, you know, that's the impact he made. Now it's just kind of like the school's completely on a different level. But again, so when Kentucky got him, I'm like, you know, that made sense. But again, it never really quite worked out. You wanted to add something? I totally heard you start talking. Oh, no, he dropped. Okay, cool. So yeah, this is RCFB Talk. If there's anything you'd like to discuss, feel free to hit a request, unmute, whatever you'd like. Love to hear from you, just kind of sort of just talking about what's going on in the news. Obviously, we just, as I mentioned, Matt Rhule has been talking the talk to try and say that they're building something there. Kind of what you'd expect a head coach to say, but I still laugh at that top comment by a Nebraska fan that the Huskers, his Huskers, as a fan, have been surviving on hype for the last 20 years. But as I've said before, I want to see Nebraska get competitive again because it's fun to see them good in the college football world. One of the other stories that's been doing pretty well on RCFB, and this is one that I don't think is, I mean, it's D2, so you don't hear about it quite as much, but the back-to-back national champs, Ferris State, their head coach, Tony Anisi, was suspended for his next playoff game, which will probably be next season because they're back-to-back champs. And the reason is so funny. It's sad, but at the same time, I mean, I kind of get it. Two of his players lit cigars to celebrate their national championship win. But, and here's that sound on its own, it sounds utterly ridiculous. But the thing was, the D2 championship has been for the last couple of years at a Texas high school stadium where they're not supposed to be smoking. And so McKinney High School has been hosting it. So they had warned the school this year not to do it because they did that last year. So they did that one more time. And that led to this punishment. And again, it's an NCAA punishment because the tournament at every level, other than, of course, FBS, is run by the NCAA. And that's why he was suspended for whatever his next playoff game may be. But that's kind of a wacky story. It's been going on for there for a while. A lot of folks are not entirely thrilled with it. Some folks have been kind of, you know, Zombie Deadspin did an article about the NCAA being unfixable. I'm not even sure who writes for them anymore, but yeah, it was kind of a mess. But at the same time, they kind of heard about it, and then there's this whole thing about if they're going to have to pay, I guess, to replace things in the locker room, like stickers of some crazy price, like $10,000. But we'll see where that goes. You know, I see we've got a couple of other folks who would like to join in. It looks like Jason, I'm going to go ahead and let you up, Jason Bailey. When you get up here, feel free to unmute. Jason, love to hear from you.
Yeah, what's going on, man? I hadn't been on. You got? I don't even remember the last time you did one of these. It's been a while since I've caught one.
No problem. Now we do them. We always do them Tuesday nights around 10 p.m. Eastern, but sometimes we do mix and match others. But yeah, in the off season, we've been doing kind of these short 30-minute sort of shows. But what's going on, man? What's your thinking?
Awesome. Well, you mentioned Nebraska, and it got me thinking about something that I was talking to my buddy about yesterday. And like a lot of people aren't really, I guess, remembering that it happened. It seems like it went under the radar. Not obviously when it happened, but now it's like people have forgotten that Luke Fickell is now at Wisconsin, and they brought in an air raid offensive coach. And when you talk about Wisconsin football and running an air raid, that is the wildest shit that I can imagine. I don't even know what the fan base is thinking. Like, I just think about old school, like gritty Wisconsin fans. They're like, I fucking hate this, you know. And they've just got to be.
It ain't Ron. It ain't the Ron Dane era. Yeah, for sure. I hear exactly what you're saying there. It's totally different.
It is.
Oh man. I mean, yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very curious to see how Luke Fickell does with there. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I tend to be patient with coaches and give them at least one or two seasons, but I think their expectations have got to be high, you know, especially for such a program that's always been competing to be at the top, at least to be the sacrificial lamb for whoever wins in the East. But we'll see how they do.
With divisions going away, that's not helping them either, you know, because now they're not going to get five free passes a year and then go be a sacrificial lamb. You know, they're not going to miss all those teams every year. They're going to have to play the Michigans and the Ohio States and the Penn States more often. So,
and it's going to be fun to see them now regularly playing USC and UCLA starting, not this season, but next season. That'll be an interesting one. That's going to mix it all up. I'm kind of excited to see that, but I have a personal bias. I am a USC alumnus, so for me, and a Minnesota alumnus, but you know,
yeah, sure.
We can't win them all in terms of football.
Yeah,
keep the Big Ten West great.
It's pretty wild that USC's women's volleyball team is going to have to hop on a plane and fly to Rutgers to go play volleyball, you know.
Well, you know, that would actually be good for volleyball overall. I'm not a huge volleyball fan, but I remember when women's volleyball was like Penn State, Minnesota, USC, UCLA. I mean, UCLA, I mean, if you ever look at the total number of championships, and I say this with a sense of bitterness because obviously they're a rival school, but UCLA absolutely crushes everybody along with – actually, it's like Stanford, UCLA, and USC are like the top three, and then I think there's a distance – then you get to a couple of other schools, but those three absolutely dominate in terms of number of NCAA championships, which are usually the non-revenue sports.
Yeah.
So it's going to rack it up for the Big Ten if those schools keep playing at the level they do. But that's what people necessarily watch, but it would be interesting to see.
Well, that's all I really kind of wanted to just bring up is like most people have forgotten that they're going to be trying to run an air raid this year, and I'm not a Wisconsin fan. But I honestly just can't wait to see what the hell that looks like. I hope it goes
absolutely
well for them.
Well, on that note, I'm going to slowly start wrapping up. You know, speaking of the air raid, as I said a couple of times, Iowa Wesleyan, the D3, birthplace of the air raid with Hal Mum, and, you know, Mike Leach was his assistant. They're closing in May, so that there goes the birthplace of the air raid. But one other story I just wanted to mention because it's just so hilarious. This has been the number one, I think, topic on RCFB this week. There, $1,500 worth of beer was stolen in Tiger Stadium over at LSU, and a 19-year-old was arrested for the theft. Which you know, some of the folks in the peanut gallery at RCFB, led by the username is Puddinhead Wilson. I can't believe the kid stole an entire six pack. But anywho. It's been a wonderful time talking to all of you. We do these every Tuesday night in the off season. It goes for about 30 minutes. Just wanted to thank you all for listening. This was RCFB Talk 132. My name is Bob Akhayeri, and now I'm going to hang up and listen.
Have a good night.